Hey, Bible nerds, this is Dr. Manny Arango, and I'm your host for the Bible Department podcast powered by Arma. This podcast follows a Bible reading plan we created to help you read the entire Bible in a year. You can head to the show notes or thebibledepartment.com to download our reading plan and join the journey. Family, welcome to day 152. We are in 1 Samuel chapters 13 to 16. Man, this is a power-packed, like, chunk of the narrative, okay? So if you've already done the reading, then you're probably like, oh my gosh, there's so many moments here that you're probably already aware of if you've read the Bible or heard a lot of sermons. This is just an action-packed, you know, couple of chapters. Lots of important stuff for the narrative happening in chapters 13, 14, 15, and 16. I'm going to try to give you as much as I can in the shortest amount of time possible. If you have not done the reading, you're really missing out, okay? This is like, you know, Saul is going to get rejected as king. He's going to sin against the Lord two times. The kingdom is going to get ripped from him, and iconic moment, David is going to get anointed as king. So tomorrow, we'll see the showdown between David and Goliath that'll happen in chapter 17. But today, we're going to get context for tomorrow. So we got 13, 14, 15, and 16. And you know me, my favorite word is context. And the first thing I got for us are context clues, okay? So let's start at chapter 13. I just kind of flipped there in my Bible. Obviously, I can't go verse by verse, but I'll give you as much as I can. Let's start with context clues. Okay, first of all, minimum at least 15 years, if not 20 years, have passed by from the end of chapter 12 to the beginning of chapter 13. Okay, I love to kind of let y'all know stuff like that because there's no place in the scriptures that will tell you that. So if you're just, you know, if you're just an average Christian and you're just reading the Bible, it's going to be really hard to know that. Here's the big clue. Here's why we know that that's true. I don't just want you to take my word for it. I want you to know why you should believe this. So when we were in chapter 12, there's a word that keeps getting used for Saul, for King Saul. It's almost like the word lad. He's being referred to like as a younger man. And what we see, even in him and Samuel's first interactions, that he's living with his dad, living with his uncles. He's a donkey herder. Like he's not someone who's like married with children. And then when we get to chapter 13, we have a whole son by the name of Jonathan. Okay, we've not seen Jonathan before, but Jonathan is now here, and Jonathan's old enough to be a commander in the army. So chapter 12. Saul has no son. Saul's son is not mentioned. Jonathan is not a relevant part of the story. And it seems as though Saul, really living with his father and uncle, still living with his family, doesn't seem like he's married. Okay. He seems to be a young, unmarried man. And now when chapter 13 rolls around, he's got a son that's old enough to be a commander in the army. Jonathan's probably somewhere around at least 15, if not 20 years old, okay? So somewhere in that age bracket. And so here we go, big piece of context. Once you leave chapter 12 and you enter into chapter 13, a good chunk of time has gone by. Now, here's the next thing that's really, really relevant, is that all that time going by means that Saul has failed to obey something that Samuel said to him 15 to 20 years ago. And here's what I want you to see. When you get to chapter 12, okay, you just go to verse 3. Sorry, chapter 13. When you get to chapter 13, you can just go to verse 3. Jonathan attacked the Philistine outpost at Geba. Now that's fascinating, okay? And if you're an attentive reader, you may have even missed this, even if you're an attentive reader, because Gibeah and Geba share a Philistine outpost. Now, that's something you probably don't know. Okay, Gibeah and Geba, you can look them up on a map. They are right next to each other, and they're so close to each other that they don't have individual Philistine outposts. They share a Philistine outpost. Now, I want you to back up to chapter 10, and you can go to verse 5. Chapter 10, verse 5. Okay, this is Samuel giving Saul some instructions, and he says, you're to go to the Philistine outpost where? at Gibeah. When you go there at Gibeah, you're going to meet some prophets. And then, verse 8, after you're done at the Philistine outpost in Gibeah, which is right next to Geba, they are actually the same Philistine outpost. Where are you supposed to go? To Gilgal. Now, I want us to go to chapter 13. What happens as soon as Jonathan attacks the Philistine outpost at Geba? What happens? Saul blew the trumpet, let the Hebrews hear. Okay, Saul is going to take credit for something that his son does. And then what is Saul going to do? He is going to head down to Gilgal. Okay, and what is he going to do? People were called out to join Saul at Gilgal. Okay, Saul was still at Gilgal and all the people following him. And he waited 7 days, the time appointed by Samuel. The time appointed by Samuel, when? 20 years ago. Dude, Samuel told you to do this 20 years ago. Here you are obeying Samuel 20 years later. And you're like, I waited for you 7 days. Bruh, you were supposed to wait for me for 7 days 20 years ago. So this is the context that I think sometimes we miss. Okay, so that's our big context clue, is that obviously Saul is now going to offer sacrifice, and he's not supposed to offer sacrifice. And here's the excuse that he gives Samuel in verse 11, 13 verse 11. Samuel said, what have you done? Saul replied, when I saw that the people were slipping away from me and that you did not come within the days appointed. In the days appointed, bro, you were supposed to do this 15 to 20 years ago. Don't try to put this on me, okay? When you didn't come in the days appointed and the Philistines were mustering at Michmash, I said, now the Philistines will come down upon me at Gilgal, and I have not entreated the favor of the Lord. So I forced myself and offered the burnt offering. So Saul offers a burnt offering. Okay, he offers a sacrifice. And this is completely unlawful. Okay, why? Why is this unlawful? Because Saul is not a priest. He is not a priest. And so here's what Samuel, the prophet, is going to say to Saul. Samuel said to Saul, verse 13, you have done foolishly. You have not kept the commandment of the Lord your God, which he commanded you. The Lord would have established your kingdom over Israel forever, but now your kingdom will not continue. The Lord has sought out a man after his own heart. So preparations for David are already being made. Okay, God has sought out a man after his own heart. And here's the big, like, climactic verse, okay, that obedience is better than sacrifice. Hey, Saul, you cannot sacrifice to the Lord, but live a disobedient life. Sacrificing to God is not a magic wand that's going to remove the fact that you've been disobedient. God doesn't want your songs, your worship, your sacrifice, if you're gonna walk in willful disobedience. I told you to do something 20 years ago. You didn't do it. Then your son finally did it because he's got faith. And once your son did it, you took the credit for it. Now you've gone to Gilgal, like I told you to do 20 years ago. And you're saying you waited for me 7 days. And there is a pattern of disobedience. And now you're trying to, you know, you're trying to almost over, like, supersede that disobedience with sacrifice. And God's like, nah, the best sacrifice you can give me is obedience. Let's start with that. Obey me. Don't sacrifice burnt offerings. Obey me. A sacrifice is not a substitute for the sacrifice of your life. You cannot sacrifice money or time or burnt offering or an animal and think that that's going to replace the sacrifice of obedience. Guess what the New Testament is going to say? That your body is a living sacrifice. How about you obey me with your mind, with your will, with your body, with your emotions? Obedience is the best sacrifice you can give me. Chapter 14, we're going to continue to see Jonathan highlighted. Now, we are going to now see a juxtaposition between Jonathan and Saul. That really, Jonathan is amazing, full of faith. And the consequence in chapter 13, let's talk about this consequence really quick. We can get into our nerdy nuggets. Here's a consequence. The consequence is not that Saul's going to get removed as king. The consequence is that his dynasty won't be set up. So that means Jonathan will not become king, which in an Eastern world that sees themselves as part of a group as opposed to an individual, this is the same as saying you're not going to be king. To say your lineage will not last is the same as saying you're not going to last, okay? Also, Saul has disobeyed the Lord. Shouldn't he die? Shouldn't the consequence for sacrificing to God when you're not a priest be death? Well, no, and here's why. Because Saul is the punishment for the people of Israel wanting a king like the other nations. So God is going to have grace for Saul, not because of anything that Saul's doing. God is going to have grace for Saul because God is using Saul as a punishment, as a vehicle for punishment for the people of Israel. The people of Israel have to learn that there's a consequence to wanting a king like the other nations, and that consequence is Saul, okay? And so God is going to prolong his mercy towards Saul, really, so that the people of Israel can be punished. All right, chapter 14, nerdy nuggets. Also, there's a nerdy nuggets already. 600 fighting men is supposed to link you back to Judges. Remember, when the Benjamites almost get wiped out, they have to restart the population with 600 fighting men, and they won't go and they take wives. Anyway, that's a callback to Judges. That's a little nerdy detail that you may have seen. Is that verse 15, 13, 15? Yeah, Saul counted the people who were present with him, about 600 men. So, okay, now let's move on to 14. Big thing with 14 is that a couple of things. Ahijah, this is 14 verse 3, along with Ahijah, son of Ahitub. Okay, first of all, he's not supposed to be a priest. So that's that, okay? The reason he's not supposed to be a priest is because in 1 Samuel chapter 2, verse 30 to 36, Eli's line gets cut off. Remember, that's the prophetic word given to Eli that none of his descendants are supposed to be priests. So they're already in sin, the fact that Ahijah is even a priest. Okay, next, okay, Jonathan eats honey. He's now at risk of losing his life, and it is because his father has made a dumb vow. Okay, this is a callback to Jephthah. Remember, back in the book of Judges, Jephthah makes a vow. Anything that comes out of my house, I'll sacrifice to the Lord. And, well, it was his daughter. And so now he's got to kill his daughter. And it's very, very clear in the text. This is stupid. This is silly. Like, God does not want you to kill your daughter. But here you are. People with a religious spirit always think sacrifice is the answer. They think burnt offerings are the answer. When really, God wants your heart. He doesn't want you to kill people, burn stuff, burn up offerings. That's not God's heart. What he's actually after is your heart. But people with a religious spirit, they don't want to give God their heart. They think that their heart is found in fundamentalism or religious obedience and fervor. It's really sad because these people think they love the Lord, but really they don't love God. They love being right. They love being right more than they actually love the Lord. And it's found in, clearly it's wrong to kill your daughter, but Jephthah kills his daughter anyway because it's a vow he's made to God and he has to obey his vow to God. And I have met people just like this in the evangelical world whose kids are homosexual or whatever, like insert any issue, and they'd rather lose the relationship than selflessly be Christ in that relationship and love their kids. Anyway, the Amish communities are like this when it comes to shunning people, family members who are disobedient. Okay, the reality is that Saul is making a ill-advised, short-sighted vow in the same way that Jephthah made a vow. So this is unwise. So Jonathan is now seen as full of faith, super brave, really bold, an incredible leader, and his father is just on the decline. So next, we're going to get to chapter 15, and Saul is supposed to wholly devote King Agag in the Amalekites, but he keeps Agag alive, which is just political maneuvering. And finally, Samuel comes and puts him to death. And this is when the kingdom gets torn, okay, from Saul. It says this, as Samuel, this is chapter 15, verse 27, as Samuel turned to go away, Saul caught hold of the hem of his robe and it tore. And Samuel said to him, the Lord has torn the kingdom of Israel from you this very day and has given it to a neighbor of yours who is better than you. So now David's been alluded to two times and the double downfall, okay, of Saul. And then we get the next chapter, and the Lord says to Samuel, how long will you grieve over Saul? I've rejected him from being king over Israel. Fill your horn with oil and set out. I will send you to Jesse the Bethlehemite, for I provided for myself a king amongst his sons. This is obviously incredibly dangerous. Saul could hear about this and kill Samuel. This is doesn't feel radical to us, but this is insanely radical. So, now we're going to get the rise of David. We're already getting the decline of Saul, and we're going to get the rise of David. Saul's kingship is short-lived. And we're going to get this line. I want to point this out to you. We're going to get this summary line. Chapter 14, verse 52. There were hard fighting against the Philistines all the days of Saul. And when Saul saw any strong or valiant warrior, he took him into his service. And the reason we're going to get a summary of Saul's kingship is because basically by the time chapter 14 is over, the kingship is over. Okay. Saul does not accomplish anything really significant or great in his kingship. Now, I gave you a bunch of nerdy nuggets. I gave you context clues, and I will now in chapter 15 and 16, David is most likely 12, 13 years old. He's pretty young. And so now God has used Saul to help turn the people from donkeys into sheep. And so now they get a leader by the name of David who is going to shepherd them. And that is going to be the ideal icon image that we get of Christian leadership throughout the Bible, is that good leaders know how to shepherd people. And here's our timeless truth, is that worship will not negate disobedience. Okay. The core thing that God desires is obedience. And I cannot worship my way out of disobedience. Real worship is obedience. Okay. God says to Saul flat out through the prophet Samuel, I would have rather have gotten obedience in you than sacrifice. Obedience is better than sacrifice. All right. I hope the context clues, the nerdy nuggets, and the timeless truth is helpful. I will see you tomorrow. And tomorrow is just an iconic day. I mean, we've got the battle between David and Goliath. I'll give you tons of context. I'll give you nerdy nuggets. I'll give you timeless truths. Hey, get on a streak. If you're already on a streak, don't break it. If you're not on a streak, all you got to get is 2 days in a row and then just keep going. So I'll see you right here tomorrow. Love you guys. So proud of you. Peace.
Thank you so much for joining me on the Bible Department podcast. If this episode was helpful, it would mean the world to me if you'd give us a follow, rate and review the show, and don't forget to share. You can learn more about the show at thebibledepartment.com and find us on Instagram at The Bible Department. If you want to dive deeper into the Bible, you can get free access to our library of courses at thebibledepartment.com. We'll see you back here tomorrow. What if I told you that what you're learning in this video was just the tip of the iceberg? The Bible Department is actually powered by Arma. What is Arma? I'm so glad you asked. Arma is an online subscription-based platform that we designed to help people, everyday people, learn the Bible for themselves. We started Arma so that anybody, anywhere, could have access to trustworthy and entertaining Bible and theology content. In addition to this podcast, we have over 60 courses on individual books of the Bible, on theology topics, and on some hot topics like homosexuality, tithing, and women in ministry. But really, Arma is a community of people that I've gotten to know, a community where thousands of people are currently finding family, asking questions, and nerding out on the Bible together. If you want a community to read the Bible with you this year, or if you want to dive into some deeper theological content, or if you want more exclusive access to me and the entire Arma team, how about you go to thebibledepartment.com. I'll be sure to post the link in the description of this video. Let's make this your year to become a Bible nerd.